I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, fate put me in the right spot last night to witness voter intimidation firsthand at the Issaquah Costco. I'll break it all down. Plus, Sound Transit's CEO gets a cushy payout for leaving her job early. And Seattle's mayor welcomes the newest council members.
I was very proud as a Seattleite to see how they led with integrity, commitment, passion.
Why a new year will bring new opportunities for Seattle to take a turn back toward sanity. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Wow, winding down 2023. Time is flying by. I'll tell you what though, I had one heck of an eventful Costco run yesterday. Fate just put me, this is the most bizarre thing. So here I am with my husband doing one of the things we love the very most, going to Costco together as a unit on a Sunday. Getting bulk toilet paper, you know, what else did we get yesterday? Bulk coffee. Man, got some of that good, the side-by-side that's like meatloaf and mashed potatoes. For Mike. I might eat some of the mashed potatoes. We were having a great time. And I noticed as we were going into Costco that there were signature gatherers outside, which I thought was great. I was like, oh, so good to see them here. Of course, gathering signatures for the 6 Let's Go Washington initiatives that we've talked about at length on the show. And they were clearly paid signature gatherers who were out there. And so I told myself, I said, oh, I'll check in with them as I leave, just see how things are going. Because we've been covering at length some of the intimidation that these signature gatherers have experienced. You now have that being supported by the State Democratic Party, by the ACLU, these hotlines encouraging people to report their locations so they can send their minions out to try to disrupt democracy. So anyway, Mike and I, we spend too much money at Costco per the usual. And then we're walking out, pushing my cart, and I just stop and talk to the guy. And I'm like, hey, you know, here, I'm so-and-so. I've been covering this issue. Just want to see how things are going, if you've been getting a lot of signatures or whatever. And he's clearly flustered, right? And he's like, well, it was going well, but now they're trying to kick us off because this woman did this. And he holds up one of the clipboards with one of the initiatives on it and proceeds to tell me about how a woman had just crossed out, he turns his back, she's got a pen, you know, because there's pens there to sign, had just crossed out, put a big X through one of the pages of initiatives. Nicole has the picture here. And I also, if you're watching the show and you're like, what's all that, those black markings? I was trying to protect voter information, so I put some of that on. So this signature gatherer tells me that he responded, yes, by trying, you know, to shout at her, but she runs into the Costco. So she's clearly a member. You can't get into Costco without a membership card. And she kind of had grabbed something off the shelves, like she's going to shop and try to just fold into Costco after committing a gross misdemeanor. And he snapped some pictures of her. I have a closer up look at just the page. There were 8 signatures on it. I mean, she just put allegedly this X through it. Now, I think that page can still be used. But to me, that's no different than someone ripping in half 8 ballots. And I've been saying, you know, you want to protect democracy. You're looking at this issue right now with these signature gathering efforts where there have been documented instances of harassment and intimidation. And so you've got these guys out there giving Washington voters an opportunity to express their rights to sign their name on paper. And this bat, you know what, crazy woman decides to come up there and put an X through it, which again is a gross misdemeanor, whether she actually obstructed the signatures or not. So she, as I said, goes into Costco trying to just kind of fold in like nothing happened. And the signature gatherer follows her and is taking more pictures. So she goes in there and she hides behind a Costco employee just so she can avoid the shame of being on camera. So what does Costco do? Well, they call the police. And you might think, well, who'd they call the police on? Who'd they call the Issaquah Police Department on? I mean, in my mind, you would call it on the person who just committed a gross misdemeanor. But no, Costco called the police on the signature gatherers. And the signature gatherer I spoke to admits that he did shout at her. He went in there with his camera, and it did cause a disturbance because he's telling her, and the photos he took are kind of live photos. You can play them momentarily, and you can hear him shouting, "You're going to jail," to this woman. So anyway, Costco ends up calling the Issaquah Police Department on the signature gatherer. So I'm talking to the guy, and he says, you know, "We're just going to pack up and leave." So this woman got what she wanted, you know, to disrupt the signature gathering process. Because she gets to fold into Costco, she gets to hide behind a Costco employee, and then Issaquah Police Department rolls up, and they're sitting there chatting with the signature gatherers as they're loading up their vehicles and the initiatives and their signs and stuff to go. So I'll just note, so a couple things. You know, we've reached out to the Issaquah Police Department, and we've also reached out to Costco to see whether Costco is, you know, willing to help the Issaquah Police Department identify this woman. Because again, they've got her on camera everywhere, right? And she committed a gross misdemeanor. This is the worst example we've seen yet of some of the efforts to disrupt the initiative gathering process. And I mean, I just happened to be there. What are the chances that at that Costco, at that moment, some people on Twitter are like, "Brandy just is making this up. She paid that woman to go." And I'm like, okay, I don't have that kind of time in my life, right? So anyway, before I get to what I'm sure is a question a lot of you have, which is, well, doesn't Costco have a right to kick these signature gatherers off? I will say that our viewers, it seems, Nicole, have identified the woman. Mm-hmm. We put out a call on social media yesterday, basically saying, hey, someone knows this chick. Can you pull back up that first picture of her? Yeah. I mean, she's got this tie-dye sweatshirt on. She's got very, like, highlighter blue shoes. And I'm like, somebody knows this lady. And there's obviously evidence that she has committed a crime. So let's identify her. So we get a bunch of emails, not only telling us her first name and her last name, but giving us her address. Now, I'll say this. I have passed along that information to Let's Go Washington because I spoke with Brian Haywood. Actually, I was calling him while all this is happening to try to see, are they going to try to file a police report or something like that? And they are. He's encouraging the signature gatherers to file a police report. And so I passed on the name of this woman to Brian Haywood so he could pass it along to the Issaquah Police Department. We're not going to name her just yet. We're going to try to reach her, give her an opportunity to explain herself. And plus, we have multiple viewers who are saying we know exactly who this woman is, but we want to make sure that we reach out to her first and try to figure out if she has any connections to any sort of democratic groups. Is just this just some unhinged, you know, crazy person who is like, I don't like these initiatives, so took it upon herself to do this? But again, keep in mind the context that this is happening under. It's happening at a time when Democrats, the ACLU, Fuse Washington, which is a progressive group, are utilizing their mail lists to encourage people to harass and intimidate signature gatherers. They've got millions of people on their email lists. And they are sending this hotline out saying, decline to sign, tell your friends, these initiatives are evil, why, you know, funded by millionaires. So is it any wonder that you might have some rogue people who go out there and do stuff like this and cross out signatures, which is no different, again, than ripping a ballot in half? I laugh because I'm on social media and I see people who are clearly Democrats saying, oh, you know, what is this last one? Because, Nicole, can you pull up the close-up picture? Oh, this one. Oh my God, how will they possibly read the names? Pearl clutching. It's like, it's not about whether you cannot use the names of, you know, whether you can't turn that in. It's about the act, right? It's about the fact that you had on this page, at least, 8 Washingtonians who wanted to sign these initiatives, and you had some ne'er-do-well who thought so little of the democratic process that they'd take a pen and put a line through it. Again, if you wouldn't condone it, if you had a right-winger who came up to a ballot box and stopped people and ripped their ballots in half, do you really think you'd have Democrats on social media trying to downplay that? Of course you wouldn't. Of course you wouldn't. So anyway, I want to get into sort of what has become this increasing, I think, some frustration from retailers about things like this happening outside their stores. Because you might think, well, Costco had every right in the world to call the police on these signature gatherers. It's private property. Except the law is kind of tricky in this regard. So Costco at this location had up signs that I thought were really interesting. It had the Costco logo. It says, "These petitioners are here without our permission. We apologize for any inconvenience." So kind of letting shoppers know, like, hey, we didn't tell them they could be here. So you might have shoppers being like, we'll just kick them off. The issue is, and you know, legal precedent on this issue is complex. And I acknowledge that it kind of pits two issues. Like, I care about property rights. I think that a private business should be able to dictate what happens on its property. But when it comes to signature gathering, what the law has basically said is if you allow other sorts of activity there, if you allow the Girl Scouts to sell Girl Scout cookies, if you allow the Salvation Army to be out there ringing a bell, if you've allowed other groups to collect signatures for other initiatives, you have essentially made yourself a town square. And so you can't pick and choose what kind of, you know, First Amendment, for instance, protected activity you're going to allow there if you've allowed other things. And that's kind of where the law is at on this issue. And I think reasonable people can disagree on whether that's appropriate. And the challenge that Costco has specifically is it has allowed other signature gathering to happen at its locations, and not just allowed it passively. Costco has actually used its locations in the past as signature gathering hubs. Do you remember, if you've been in Washington State long enough, you remember when they had government-run liquor stores? Which was crazy, by the way. That was like something out of a futuristic movie that the government controlled liquor distribution. Well, back in 2010, Costco wanted to be part of trying to change that. So they actually used more than 20 of their locations, I think it was 26 stores, where they had tables set up for people to sign the liquor initiative to change it from being a state-run issue. And they had employees manning the tables. So Costco has opened itself up as a quote-unquote town square. And so because they did that, they put themselves in a legal gray area when dictating which signature gatherers they're then going to allow to be there and which ones they're not. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll about this because, like I said, I think reasonable people can disagree on this, that, hey, you're a private company, you can let the Girl Scouts there and not let any signature gatherers there, whatever it is. So I imagine that you guys are going to be pretty split on this issue. I said, do you believe private retailers should be able to pick and choose which signature gatherers to allow on their property? So we'll read some of your comments on this. But like I said, I bet this is going to be one of our absolutely most divisive polls in the history of the polling that we've been doing. Right now, there's a majority of people saying yes, that it's their property. They should be allowed to pick and choose. Chris said, you can't put... So when I asked you guys this question, I said, just disregard case law, right? If we were just starting from scratch here, do you think that property should be allowed to dictate who comes in and does that and who doesn't? Chris says, Brandy, you can't put case law aside. That's what governs what we do. Signature gathering is protected. Annette says, if they own the property, then yes. If they're renting, the landlord has a right to choose, but the retailer doesn't have to be cordial. Well, I mean, they might not have to be cordial, but they can't also then be intimidating signature gatherers, if that makes sense, because that would be against the law. Let's see. Sally said, I voted yes. If the signature gatherers are inside, then yes, the property owner should be able to allow or disallow it. If outside the business, to me, that is more of a public area and should be allowed with Costco. They already set a precedent by collecting signatures for the alcohol initiative. Y says, I voted yes. The business should be able to say no to initiatives that do not align with their values. As much as this will most likely skew the signature gathering locations favoring a side, I still think their right and freedom should be protected also. Yeah, on Patreon right now, 70% of people who've taken the poll say yes, it's their property. And that is a tricky issue for conservatives as well, because it is conservative groups who by and large are going to be running initiatives and referendums because they're, you know, Democrats have full control. So Democrats are kind of already getting the laws that they want or don't want. Conservatives and Republicans aren't. So they're going to be running more initiatives. At the same time, they're very in favor of private property rights. So I can understand how this is a really tricky area for them because they don't want to lose their ability to collect signatures. But, you know, I'll say this, it might not be popular among, you know, Brian Haywood and Let's Go Washington. I prefer the volunteer signature method. If it were up to me, you wouldn't have paid signature gatherers. They'd lower the threshold for the number of signatures you had to collect to qualify for the ballot so that it could be done with volunteers. And I also tend to think that you should be doing it at businesses that want you there. I mean, Lord knows, you know, it's annoying sometimes when you're going shopping and you've got individuals who are trying to get you to come even buy stuff or something. But when Nicole and I did our signature gathering for Referendum 101 over the summer, we went to businesses that wanted us there. We went to a brewery, we went to a coffee shop, we went to a public park in one instance where there was plenty of space for people who didn't want to be around that activity, not to be there. So I, as much as it might make the initiative in the referendum process more difficult, I tend to think that, you know, go somewhere where you're wanted. Go somewhere where you know that you're not going to be harassed and where you're going to be able to collect signatures, no problem. All right, one more thing on this. We talked about this at length on Sundays with Subscribers this week. If you are interested in this issue of harassment and intimidation of signature gatherers and the lengths that the Democratic Party, the ACLU, progressive groups are going to try to thwart this initiative effort, go watch our Sunday show from yesterday, because what we talked about is we went into detail with documentation how some of what's going on is rising past the level of just the kind of occasional harassment, Democrats sending out their minions to harass and intimidate signature gatherers. There is this crazy effort going on right now to actually try to poach through bribery some of these paid signature gatherers to leave the state of Washington until the end of the year. There's evidence of this. I'm not making that up. It sounds crazy, but there's a lot of money going into trying to say, okay, they've got these paid signature gatherers. How can we stop them from collecting signatures? Well, let's offer them money to leave the state until the new year. So on December 14th, former Attorney General Rob McKenna, who now is in private practice, he wrote on behalf of Let's Go Washington a cease and desist letter to the SEIU 775, which is the Union for Home Healthcare Workers, which has been spending like $250,000 to push back against the initiative effort, also sent the cease and desist to Fuse Washington and Fieldworks, which is a Washington, D.C.-based political group. And they detailed some of these harassment and intimidation efforts that are going on and basically said, hey, we think this is illegal. We want you to cease and desist. And if you don't, we might sue you. So that's happening in the background. But then Let's Go Washington provided us with pictures of flyers, some text messages that they'd received from these paid signature gatherers who are all sharing a similar story, where they'll have individuals come up to them, give them a flyer saying, hey, if you go to Florida, until the end of the year, until December 29th, we'll pay you thousands of dollars. We'll cover your travel expenses, your lodging expenses, your rental car expenses, and we'll pay you thousands of dollars to help us sign people up for health insurance plans in Florida. So basically making them glorified, like phone telemarketers kind of, but they have to go to Florida to do it. And Let's Go Washington sent us a couple things as evidence of this, because they had several signature gatherers who took these people up on that offer, like, oh, I could go to Florida instead of being here in Washington collecting signatures, and you're going to pay me thousands of dollars and you're going to cover my travel expenses. So one of the paid signature gatherers who agreed to leave sent Let's Go Washington essentially the agreement that they signed to do this. And they also sent Let's Go Washington proof of the bank transaction where this entity paid them $3,500. So Nicole, if you could bring this up. So the agent agreement, it basically lays out the terms of, hey, you're going to help us collect or get people to sign up for health insurance for a company down in Florida. We're going to pay you, you know, up to $4,000, depending on how many valid and payable applications that you can collect. And then it says this, duration of stay. Agent is expected to participate from their date of arrival through December 29th, 2023, in order to be eligible for a payment of $5,000. Think about that. December 29th, 2023. That would be when the initiative gathering, the signature gathering is no longer happening in Washington State. You guys, think about this. This is crazy stuff. I mean, this is bribery, right? So you have these progressive groups that are spending money to bribe paid signature gatherers for thousands of dollars to send them to Florida until December 29th, 2023. One thing I thought was interesting, the Seattle Times did a story on some of these the allegations of harassment and intimidation against the Let's Go Washington initiatives. And they said this, they wrote this about SEIU, the Union 775. It says, recent campaign filings show SEIU 775 paid $250,000 between November 21st and November 30th to two out-of-state political firms, including Fieldworks, for consulting and other work in opposition to the initiatives. But here's the kicker. Adam Glickman, SEIU 775's secretary treasurer, declined an interview request. In an email, he also would not comment on whether the union was funding incentive payments for signature gatherers to leave Washington State. SEIU 775 won't confirm or deny that they are spending money on these bribery payments to get paid signature gatherers out of Washington? If you're not doing it, that's easy, right? You've already been communicating with Jim Bruner of the Seattle Times. If you weren't doing that, you would tell him you weren't doing that, right? And what does SEIU 775 have to gain? Well, again, they're a union of home healthcare workers. What does one of the initiatives entail? It would make the long-term care tax optional. And if it's made optional, the program will immediately be insolvent. And they know that. So this is, again, about all the money that is going to come in from some of these taxes that the initiatives are trying to repeal. So now you've got this union, which, in my opinion, based on the evidence, is trying to bribe paid signature gatherers to leave the state so they can keep taxing you for something you don't even want. It's crazy stuff. And to top it all off, Nicole, what are the chances I'm at freaking Costco last night?
I mean, sometimes God just puts you in the right place, right?
Sure. Yeah.
I think that's it.
I mean,
you're supposed to be there.
For the worst example of harassment of initiative gatherers, mm-hmm. who happens to be there? Yours truly. You know, one of the things that was really interesting that happened, I don't really know how to read it. So I'm there, you know, I've got no makeup on, I'm just casual, and Mike and I are pushing out this cart full of stuff. And I'm talking to the guy, and he's explained to me what happens. And a Costco manager came up to me and said, hey, are you a journalist? We can't have you doing interviews out here. And so immediately I was like, well, he must know who I am, right? Because, and I kind of said it, it's that phrase like, oh, do you know who I am? I didn't mean it like that, but I was like, why would your first inclination be to ask me if I'm a journalist? When I don't have a camera, I have nothing, I'm just talking to this guy with my cart full of groceries,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, you know, do you know who I am? And he said, no, I don't. I'm like, eh, that doesn't sound ring true to me. But then he was sort of telling me that, hey, you know, I would support some of these initiatives. Mm-hmm. Probably shouldn't have said that to me, but mm-hmm. but it's not about that. He's like, this is why we don't like to have him here, because passions get inflamed and then, you know, stuff like this happens, which I totally get. But the law is tricky for Costco. And if they really cared about, to me, the call to police wouldn't have been like, hey, these signature gatherers. It would have been, also, are they helping? And that's what we've asked them. Are you helping Issaquah right. police, or are you willing to help Issaquah police identify the woman who disenfranchised voters outside your store?
Right.
Because if they're not, then Costco and I are going to have a little problem.
It is a little tricky. I'm curious of when you can decide. So if you, you know, they let the people, the liquor
yeah.
signature gathering, what if they then decide, okay, that's enough, yeah. we're not doing it anymore?
Because that was 13
when
years
ago. When is that? I don't get it.
I agree. Because, and that was 13 years ago. And mm-hmm. so if you, how long as a business do you have to have kind of a clean record
right.
of saying, no, we're not allowing this stuff before mm-hmm. you get to choose? I mean, as a total aside to that, before we move on to another topic mm-hmm. today, Costco should support these efforts. Businesses should support these efforts because the tax climate in the state is wild. The public safety, I mean, That Issaquah Costco had a car drive into it, remember? And steal jewelry.
Oh,
wasn't
yes,
that it?
Yeah.
So they should support, if they got to pick and choose, these would be initiatives that Costco should be supporting.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons that it's, that I kind of agree that they, if they, well, especially if they decide to let one, they need to let them all. Because Costco is ran by, I mean, I know they have a CEO or a president, but they're ran by a lot of people. So each individual store has different management.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's corporate. And so how do you decide who gets that biggest say? And I mean, I guess it could mm-hmm. be the president. But I kind of agree with the sentiment that if you're going to allow one, you can't, like, dictate all the stores, and
right.
that would make it hard because Costco's in every state. Do you just
yeah.
take all the states? So I kind of like that it's a very public store. You mm-hmm. have a lot of people going there of every, you know, whatever side they're on, right?
Yeah.
And the management, too, is on both sides. And so I say just open it up, but there has to be rules, and people just need to be
– you can't be crossing out signatures and losing your ever-loving mind.
Respectful.
They should – What Costco should do is they should cancel that woman's membership. That's the ultimate punishment. That's worse than jail time, is getting your Costco membership canceled.
That would be bad.
That would be the worst, right? Well, that's punishment.
I don't know that that's her, because they're outside. They're not in the store. That was her, you know, I'm not saying defending her by any means, but it's not their responsibility to punish her.
She caused a scene at their store. I think they should cancel her Costco membership. Meh. We know your name, lady. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, yeah. I mean, this is a whole debate that I kind of love the debate, because there are really reasonable arguments on both sides. Mm-hmm. I know the folks at the Retailers Association, and they deal with a lot. And I understand the frustration that this poses for them, especially when you got Democrats being like, hey, go harass these signature mm-hmm. gatherers. Well, if you weren't harassing them, there wouldn't be a problem. If the lady hadn't harassed him, he wouldn't have followed her inside to take pictures and shouted at her that you're going to jail. So if you didn't have highly orchestrated, using email lists with millions of voters, telling them, oh, go harass, basically, in so many words, go harass people, then this wouldn't be happening. So there's an element of responsibility on the left that they need to own up to.
Yep.
And Shasti Conrad, in her credit, the chair of the state Democratic Party, she told Jim Bruner of the Times that she actually recognizes that the snitch line maybe went a little too far. Now, is she going to call for it not to be used? Haven't seen that yet.
It went too – the snitch line itself was not too far. Just asking for descriptions of people was too far. So don't give her that much. Yeah. She doesn't
– she said that their snitch line saying, snitch line give us a physical description of the signature gatherer, maybe went too far because it reads as intimidation. You think? Crazy stuff. So cooler heads need to prevail.
How many times have we heard that Trump encourages bad behavior, or whoever, you know, the right encourages bad behavior, and now the left is, I mean, blatantly encouraging bad behavior and not being called out
for it. I would like to see some reasonable Democrats say that. Democrats have been not a peep. I haven't seen any proactive comments from Democrats saying, hey, you know, we've been complaining for 4 years about democracy in peril. Maybe we shouldn't be supporting as a party these sorts of efforts because it leads to stuff like this. Mm-hmm. Where are the common sense Democrats saying that? If I've missed proactive comments, statements, I mean, Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, you should be out there. You should be condemning this publicly. You did over the summer for harassment. You should be condemning this. This should be a pretty easy one for you, especially as a moderate Democrat. So anyway, all right, we'll move on from the signature gathering stuff, but what an eventful trip to Costco it was for me. I mean, like Nicole said, sometimes you just put in the right time at the right place. Costco, but please don't revoke my membership. I still want to shop there.
That would be terrible.
I still want to shop there.
Mike would have to go alone. You'd be broke.
Let's leave Mike out of this. Anyway, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, Sound Transit CEO decided to leave her job early for personal reasons that are totally valid, but she's getting a big fat paycheck to do it. Makes no sense. We'll get to that. But first, it is a new year soon. It might be time to reevaluate your family's budget, especially given the strain on gas prices, prices at the grocery store, all these taxes that you're paying. A good place to start is your insurance. Do you have the insurance you need? And have you checked lately whether you might be able to save a little money? Well, don't do all that work yourself. Take the First Mark Challenge. That's what Mike and I did. First Mark is a local company. They've been doing this a long time. When you sign up for the First Mark Challenge at firstmarkinsurance.com, they're going to schedule some time virtually. You're going to talk through your insurance needs. They're going to go out. They're going to shop the market for you and find out if they can save you money. And they're not going to charge you a dime, which is the awesome part about being part of the First Mark family. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark, and he says, yeah, they're going to go in there and see if they can save you some cash, but they also have, there's other aspects of the service they offer that are valuable as well.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage. It's having the right coverage at a competitive rate, and it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah. No. And the answer is no.
No, we can't. Okay. No. Yeah, you'll probably have to invest about an hour in it. Mike and I took a little longer because I'm so chatty and I just really like Dave. But all that investment on the front end, not only can it save you money, I've heard from folks who are saving $100, if not $200 a month for the same type of insurance they had or better, which is again, a no-brainer. But they can also, every single year, what they're doing is proactively behind the scenes, making sure you still have the best price. Do you still have the insurance you need? Do you still have it at the rate that you should be getting it? And they're going to do that for you so you don't have to do it yourself. So take some time in the new year to do the FirstMark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. They work for you, which is the best part. All right, Sound Transit CEO is leaving her post after only like 16 months. And in the process, the board for Sound Transit has agreed to give her a big fat payout. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right, so let me start by saying that Sound Transit CEO Julie Timm has a good reason for leaving. She is leaving her post after just 16 months, and she is going back to the East Coast, she says, to take care of her elderly father. And he's not doing well. He's not in good health. So I think that that's obviously a perfectly good reason to leave a job. I certainly don't fault her for that. My concern in all of this, and what I think is unbelievable, is the fact that you have someone who's only worked there for 16 months. They have decided to leave the post early, and Sound Transit is now going to pay her a salary for the next year while she's not working there. So according to the Seattle Times, the agency is going to pay her $375,000 salary for another year plus benefits after she departs on January 12th. Man, give me a public sector CEO job, for the love. It says, members of the agency's governing board approved the package Friday afternoon amid tributes to Tim's hard work and attention to transit riders and stations. Tim will do consulting work for the agency in the coming year. The Seattle Times says it was not made immediately clear why Tim's exit after a brief tenure, a departure she says is her own choice, prompted the payout. A one-page board motion described Tim's contract as ended by mutual agreement. Sound Transit staff on Friday would not provide a copy of Tim's entire transition agreement, which hopefully eventually they will, because they get a lot of our money to be able to operate Sound Transit. But this was also the previous CEO, Peter Rogoff. He also got a year's salary. His was $379,000 after they decided not to renew his contract, which to me is like only in the public sector. And I understand that there is severance payouts. Like if your company wants to fire you, they're basically like, well, we don't want them to sue us or whatever it is. So you sign a thing saying you're not going to sue or take any action against us, X, Y, Z, and we're going to give you a big fat payout. And that's in the company's interest. But what is in the interest of Sound Transit to continue to pay these people after they've left? There's nothing. You know, they say in the Seattle Times article that she did such great work. Good, but for 16 months. There is no rational reason, especially for an agency that has been knocked for years for not being good stewards of money, for going over budget on things. There is no good reason to write her a check for more than $300,000 for a year's worth of work that she's not doing. And they're trying to justify it saying, well, you know, if we need her for some consulting, we're going to give her a call and she's going to be there to help us. That's fine. Then pay her for consulting work. If you need her, pay her for consulting work. But don't pay her a year's salary to do maybe nothing while she takes care of her ailing father. All right, that has been your segment, Unbelievable, for today. It's just ridiculous. Okay, before we get to Bruce Harrell, I loved this press conference. Bruce Harrell had a nice press conference where he introduced the newest council members for the city. And I thought it was great because it's such an opportunity to steer Seattle back to sanity. So we're going to hear from those new council members coming up next. But first, as we talk about the landlord-tenant crisis, which it really is becoming a crisis, you have small landlords who are being completely taken advantage of by tenants who are using these strict laws to their advantage so they can just not pay rent. You know, it's carryover from pre-pandemic into the pandemic, where it was basically impossible to evict someone. And now you have cities like Seattle and now Tacoma that are putting these intense restrictions on landlords. Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, not only is he a real estate agent, but he's also a small landlord who has units in Tacoma, who's really struggling to decide whether to keep him. And he says these strict landlord-tenant laws have reduced the amount of available affordable rental units.
Since 2019, Seattle has lost over 11,000 rental units.
Wow, yeah.
This is important. This is something, you know, like those are less rental units on the market. Majority of those, Brandy, they're not crappy little apartments. Mm-hmm. Those are single family homes. That is the cream of the crop when it comes to, you know, rental inventory. Those are not being sold to other investors. You know, those just, they don't pencil anymore. Somebody's had that for 10, 15, 20 years, you know, and that's going to go to somebody who is going to move, you know, into the city. Mm-hmm. That is out of the rental pool. That is gone.
Yeah, which is the exact opposite of what the party in power believes, wants us to believe is the goal here, to make sure that people have affordable rental units, reliable rent places to rent. And these policies are scaring away mom and pop landlords, and they're selling their units entirely. And Wes, like I said, he said time will tell whether that happens in Tacoma. But if you're a small landlord and you're thinking about, gosh, do I have to sell my unit? Should I keep it? Reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. He can offer you some advice on the state of the market, whether it is a good time to sell. And he's also in it with you, so you guys can commiserate about that. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell is welcoming 5 new members of the Seattle City Council as we enter the new year. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Look, 2024 is a huge year for our state. Not only do we have an opportunity to make some real change when it comes to the 2024 elections, you know, there's an important legislative session coming up, but I will say that our state enters the new year in better shape. I'm going to be optimistic and positive about that. There is now going to be a majority on the Seattle City Council of common sense, comparably moderate council members. Seattleites decided to choose people who wanted to prioritize public safety, people who want to make Seattle more business friendly. And so certainly time will tell heading into the new year when they finally take their positions and take office, whether they're going to make good on some of their campaign promises. But again, when we talk about Seattle heading into the new year in better shape, being optimistic here, you don't have Shama Sawant. You don't have someone who has been really a barrier to common sense and sanity on the city council, someone who has advocated for some of the worst policies like police defunding and taxing Amazon, someone who has had her minions take over council chambers in a way that prevents any sort of legitimate discourse and conversation and debate. So we're going into Seattle in 2024 in better shape. So Mayor Bruce Harrell had a press conference where he brought in the new council members, which I thought was really nice. And he talked about the fact that he thinks that they are going to be much more productive.
I've personally watched these council member elects campaign, and I was very proud as a Seattleite to see how they led with integrity, commitment, passion. All of them talk strongly about public safety, their commitment to the issues residents care about, housing and homelessness, a focus on the basics like constituent response and listening, fixing potholes, accessible transit, clean and welcoming parks.
Yeah, and we also heard from each of the 5 new council members. We thought we'd just play some clips from them.
We have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to help usher in a new culture at Seattle City Hall, one that's based on collaboration, transparency, getting things done, mutual trust and respect.
We just did not want the job title. We actually want to do the job. And, you know, city council is a destination for us to be able to do the job, serve our constituents. And I'm looking forward to working with them, working with the mayor's office and you all as well to keep pushing our city forward.
I love this city. I've been here 22 years. I'm raising 2 daughters here. And I'm just looking forward to getting the city back to the vibrant state so that our kids are really thriving here as well as all of us.
We do need to address the issues of public safety, of homelessness, affordable housing, and climate change. And in District 5, particularly important to everyone, and it's sort of the holy grail, is getting a sidewalk in every single neighborhood.
We have to have that positive, engaged leadership as we move forward and listen and reach out, and most important, listen to all stakeholders to get all the different pieces of it so we can get it right the first time out of the council, and that's so important.
Yeah, and I think my expectation for them out of the gate and the thing I want at the base level is for them to act like adults, is for them to put aside the performative politics that had really become ingrained in previous council members and the way that they did business, where everything to them was about show and tell. It was like, how can I please these activists? What can I say? How can I vote in a way that'll please the loudest voice in the room? And that's no way to run a city. That's no way to run a city like Seattle. And so there is a majority
to prioritize issues related to public safety, to prioritize improving the business climate, which is very, very good. Now, I will say, as a word of caution, that we had council members who were elected in 2019 who campaigned on all of that stuff, too. Andrew Lewis, the councilman for downtown, who will soon not be the councilman for downtown, he campaigned on a promise to hire more officers. He talked about how wonderful officers were, best trained in the country. And then he turned around 6 months later and pledged to defund. He watched his district in downtown Seattle go into ruin, look like a ghost town, taken over by people overdosing on fentanyl. And then this summer, he voted down a common sense ordinance to allow Seattle police to arrest people for using drugs out in the open. So there has been a notable difference in the past in Seattle between what candidates campaign on, you know, and moderating their views during an election, and then what they actually prioritize when they are under pressure, when they're being shouted at by activists, when they're being painted with broad brushstrokes and labels and right wing if you support the police, etc. So I really hope that not only do these new council members prioritize the things that they promised voters they would prioritize, but I hope that they can withstand some of the pressure from Seattle's activist class that previous council members have proven incapable of withstanding. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And I will also say on that I'm going to give these council members the same consideration I gave Bruce Harrell. When Bruce Harrell took office and he campaigned basically on bringing in sort of a different philosophy of getting the work done, of cleaning up the city, et cetera, I backed away a little bit from Bruce Harrell. I was like, let's let him, you know, what does Russell Wilson say? Let him cook, see what he does, you know, and see if he improves things. And I think that Bruce Harrell has said a lot of the right things. He's done some things in cleaning up certain problem spots in the city, although I'd like him to do more. But I'm not immediately going to jump down the throat of these council members. They have a lot of work to do in a difficult environment. I'm planning to give them some grace to be able to do it. But if they turn around and pull an Andrew Lewis on us, if they fall back into the performative politics of Shama Sawant, then that grace is going to be extinguished as far as I'm concerned. All right, let's step outside of Washington State. Oh, we got to do it, don't we? The sex tape watched round the world. Man, there's so many elements of this sex tape story that it boggles the mind. So I'm sure you've either seen the sex tape or seen headlines of it. I've done my best not to actually watch it, although when you scroll through social media, it was pretty hard over the weekend to avoid it. So a Senate staffer for Democratic Senator Ben Cardin, this is the headline from the New York Post, Senate staffer who allegedly filmed public sex in Congress ousted from Ben Cardin's office. So the way that this all sort of developed over the weekend was really interesting because you had admittedly some conservative outlets who were the first to break this story, right? And they had, I mean, this is insane. What they identified as this Aiden Massey Kurzposky, 24-year-old legislative aide for Senator Ben Cardin, having sex in a Senate hearing room, where they had hearings on Russian collusion, and it's empty, and he's having sex with his male, I don't know if it's a boyfriend or lover or whatever it is, and they post it on social media. For what my understanding is sort of like a secondary account, not as like official X account, but maybe a secondary one. But what did he expect was going to happen? What did you expect was going to happen? You took a video having sex in a Senate hearing room and posted it on social media. People were going to ask questions. So anyway, there was a couple things that developed. So NBC News is getting just blasted for its coverage of this. Because again, this Aiden kid, he's not denying it. I'll get to his comment momentarily. Senator Cardin's office fires him. But NBC News still feels the need to couch all of this by attributing it to conservative media. Their headline, Senate staffer alleged by conservative outlets to have had sex in a hearing room is no longer employed. Like, what kind of headline is that? Now, I get it. So the video is the back of his head, although he turns a couple times where you can kind of see his side profile. But the conservative outlets were able to confirm with people like that's who it was. And then the account it was posted on had Aiden's name on it. So wild stuff. But I understand, like, NBC, if they weren't able to personally confirm that this is who this is having sex in this video, I understand them saying alleged to have had sex in a Senate hearing room. But the video exists, so it's not alleged. It's a real video. And Senator Cardin's office fired him. So, and he's commenting about it, the staffer is, on social media. So the only reason you'd need to put conservative outlets in there is because you want to taint the story, right? And just generally speaking, it was shocking to me how few of the mainstream outlets were picking up the story over the weekend. I was like, if this were a Republican Senate staffer who filmed themselves having sex in a Senate hearing room, do you think one single American news outlet would not have done the story over the weekend or would have couched it by saying liberal outlets are reporting? Of course not. It's just a way to sort of taint the story. And I struggled over the weekend. I'm like, are they hands off because it's a Democrat's staffer, or are they hands off because the staffer's gay? Or is it both?
Yeah, I would say both.
A combination of both. I tend to think it's more so that the staffer's gay. And the conservative outlets bothered me because they were like, films gay sex. And I'm like, this would be a problem regardless of the gender of the two people having sex. Whether it's gay sex or straight sex, to me, makes no difference. And by them putting that in the headline and making it a focus of the headline, I think gave people reason to say, oh, you guys are just homophobes. And the LinkedIn post from this Aiden kid who, I mean, his life is ruined, but he did it to himself. And you'll see in his comment how he plays the victim. And it's wild to me. But, and I'll get to this in a second. It's not a surprise he's playing the victim because that's what he's been trained to do as a gay man in America. He says, this has been difficult. This has been a difficult time for me as I have been attacked for who I love to pursue a political agenda. Like, dude, no.
Not why you're attacked.
No, that's not why you're in trouble. While some of my actions in the past have shown poor judgment, I love my job and would never disrespect my workplace.
You did.
Dude, you kind of did. What's your definition of disrespecting your workplace? Any attempts to characterize my actions otherwise are fabricated, and I will be exploring what legal options are available to me in these matters. Yeah, good luck to you, buddy.
Yeah.
As for the accusations, and then this same staffer was accused of also shouting Free Palestine at a Jewish member of Congress, and he sort of commented on that, and he's saying that he did not do that. But I think the sex in the hearing room is sort of taking precedence at this moment. And there were a lot of Democrat or liberal influencers on Twitter who were also going after this guy for using his sexuality to distract or not take responsibility for his actions. Because his sexuality, at the end of the day, has nothing. I mean, that doesn't negate it. That doesn't make it better. That doesn't make it worse. This is bad, no matter how you spin it, no matter who participated in it. But it also shows this level of, I don't think it's arrogance, but this belief that there aren't consequences, right? You have someone who's in this protected class, you know, who's gay, who's a member of the LGBTQ community, who has sort of, it's been ingrained in their head that you can kind of do no wrong. You do whatever you want to do because you're a member of the LGBTQ community. And if anyone criticizes anything that you do, that they're just a homophobe, right? Because that's the tactic that's always used. I mean, when we were collecting signatures for Referendum 101, what do they say? Oh, you're a transphobe. Like, you hate trans kids. It's like, no, I hate the policy. And in this case, no, I disagree with what he did. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's gay. But this is what we're teaching these kids, that this kid actually thinks that they can have sex in a Senate hearing room where they work, post it to the internet, and not get in trouble for it.
Entitlement.
That's scary stuff. Mm-hmm. And look, like, gosh, when I was 24, if everything I did when I was 24 was on, I never had public sex in my workplace and posted it.
Good to know.
Just for the record, on social media, I never did anything this bad at all. But I was not an angel when I was 24. And if everything I did when I was 24 was posted to the internet, like, I don't think that I'd be doing what I was doing, what I'm doing now. But obviously nothing close to this. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, his life is kind of ruined. Where do you go from there, right? Like, you had sex in a Senate hearing room and you got fired for it. And he's 24 and his life is ruined. But I feel bad for him. But I feel bad for this whole generation that has all these adults on the left teaching them that they're like invincible, that they're in this protected class, mm-hmm. and no matter what they do, there aren't consequences for them. So I kind of feel bad for the kids who have been, this kid's 24. That has been the prevailing narrative for probably 6 years for a young kid in the LGBTQ community.
Yep, I agree. And actually, I do think he'll be fine because somebody will feel sorry for him and give him another chance, and he'll be fine. He'll change his last name or something and be fine, because that it is the atmosphere we're giving them.
Yeah.
There are no consequences to their actions. You can steal Kias,
right,
and break into pot shops, and there's no consequences.
And they're like, oh, well, because of the color of your skin, like, we'll give right. you a slap on the wrist because the judicial system is racist, and then the kid doesn't learn right. anything, and then they go on and they kill someone, and then they're in prison for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. I'm not mad at the kids as much as I am about mm-hmm. the adults who foster the environment.
Exactly.
And the same with this Aiden kid. He's 24. I am mad at the adults who gave him that sense of twisted entitlement.
It's I'm not for spanking, but I think that's when everything flipped.
Yeah,
when they stopped spanking, there was no threats anymore, and there's no, and it continued up through.
It goes well adulthood. Beyond spanking, but yes, I mean, corporal punishment. It goes well beyond spanking, but also, you know, this idea in schools where it's like, oh, you can't fail a kid who shows mm-hmm. up. Okay, well, they're going to fail in life. And then what's going to happen? Is someone going to rescue them? Or, oh, the discipline at schools is racist. So it's yeah. like, oh, you can do something serious at a school, but then you're not facing expulsion or whatever it mm-hmm. is. So it's all these, like, you take kids who are doing things wrong, who are failing, who are not being productive, who are setting themselves up to be bad adults, yeah. and you just say, oh, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Oh, you want to have sex in the setting here on your? It's okay. It's okay. That's okay. just ridiculous.
And there are no due God. Dates. Do you know that? There are no due dates for projects or papers or assignments anymore. If you miss it, you just have to turn it in.
Well, I'm sure for some schools there are common sense schools.
No,
but.
I mean, every child I've talked to recently is like, yeah, no, you can turn it in as soon as you get it in. I mean, you're supposed to turn it in on a certain day, but if you don't, that's okay, just as long as you get it in.
Well, we just saw these calls, the plagiarism rules in college are racist.
Uh-huh.
So you shouldn't expel people for plagiarism. Okay, how is that going to work in real life? Like, they go work in tech and they just steal something from another company and they're like, well, mm-hmm. what do you mean? Yeah. This has been fine.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
It is wild.
It's really wild. It's wild. Aiden, mm-hmm. I am sorry that people led you astray for so long. I am sorry that you were so led astray as a young gay man in this country that you thought that you could have sex in a Senate hearing room, tape it, and put it on social media, and everything would be fine. I genuinely feel bad for you. All right, before we get to questions and comments from the live stream, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. Seriously consider this. If you've been hearing me, now they've been a sponsor on our show for a year, and if you've been thinking, well, you know, now is not a good time, the new year is coming up. I cannot think of a better time to start new year. I've been saying, don't tie a weight loss program to some weird date like, oh, I'm going to turn my life around starting on the first of the year, because that's just not realistic. But if you've been thinking about it, I think after the holidays might be a good time to start. I'm down 37 pounds. I lost most of that weight in 2 months. So if you start in January, I mean, gosh, by March, by spring break, you could be down 20, 30 pounds. Reach out to Dr. Ryan Coogan. Just schedule a free 15-minute consultation. It's virtual. It doesn't cost anything, and there's no commitment. So you can call and ask all the questions you want, or schedule a free virtual meeting and ask all the questions you want. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. No prepackaged meals. No counting calories. No strenuous workout routines. No drugs or injections. They're just teaching you what to eat in the right portions, and then how to also enjoy your life. You know what I had over the weekend? Oh my gosh. I've got to get a shout out to this restaurant. Hold on. People will let me do this because it's for local small business.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. I've got to tell you, this freaking restaurant that Mike and I went to over the weekend before the Costco ordeal.
Uh-huh.
Oh, come on. It's in downtown Issaquah. Hold on, guys. This is important. It's small business. We're trying to help out small. It's a dim sum place. There it is. There it is. Mackey's Dim Sum. Mackey's Dim Sum in Issaquah. It's right next to Jack's, the thing. It was so good. But it's allowed on maintenance. I'm on Eastside Weight Loss Clinic maintenance, and you get to live your life. Mike and I got all these little dishes. Oh, little fried rice, little garlic green beans, all sorts of things. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so good. Mackey's Dim Sum, this is a free commercial for you. Delicious, affordable, great place to take your kids. And also, okay to eat. I'll eat side weight loss clinic long-term maintenance plan. All right. Questions and comments.
To take your kids. Is there toys in the corner?
No, but it's just like, I told Mike, I said, if we have kids, we'd totally take them here. Because you can order all these little things, and they're like $6 a plate or whatever. And it's a ton of food.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great value for your dollar.
Okay.
Mackey's dim sum. They're not paying me for this. This is not an ad. And you get to try a bunch of things. So how fun for a kid. You know, yes. Who might be a little picky, you want them to explore with their palate, and you get them a bunch of...
Okay.
It was tasty. I'm not going to lie. It was tasty. Okay. what are we doing in the show right now? Okay, great. Bill Caldwell says, thanks for reporting on this related to the... Costco run that went wild. The harassment of signature gatherers has gone on too long. I agree. Karen says, you are a diehard going to Costco on a Sunday. Yeah, it was a busy, busy day, but Mike had to get his tires fixed. So his truck was at the Costco tire place. And then we went to dim sum place, and then we went back to Costco. Kyle T, surely her actions violate something in the membership contract of Costco. You'd think so. I got to look into the membership contract. Jeremy Sorensen, liquor was cheaper before Costco got involved. Was it? Liquor is super cheap at Costco. That's where Mike and I got all our liquor for our wedding.
Yeah, I don't know if it was cheaper. I don't remember if it was cheaper, but it was kind of fun going to liquor stores.
I did not think so. When I first moved here, it was on the... in the last months of that being a thing, where the liquor was sold mm-hmm. in the... Who ran it? The Department of... Or Liquor Control.
Yeah, it was Liquor
Control. And I thought it was so strange. Oh my gosh, I thought it was so weird, because I came from the Midwest. We didn't have anything like that. And I was very weird. So, mm-hmm. wow, that was forever ago.
It was.
Although Minnesota has some weird things, too. Like, they don't sell... There's a lot of counties that are dry on Sundays. Mm-hmm. So you actually cannot find a place to buy liquor. And their liquor is in liquor stores, but they're not government...
I know Linden has the same kind of thing. So I know there are a couple cities, at least in Washington, that have the same kind of policy.
Like they don't sell liquor on Sundays because mm-hmm. it's the Lord's Day.
That's right.
Hey, he drank wine.
He did.
Right? So I don't know what you're talking about.
He did.
Okay, ACR says, how absolutely obscene. I cannot believe she is being paid that money regarding the payout for the Sound Transit lady. Like, again, I mean, my heart goes out to her. Never fun to have a sick family member that you have to take care of, but that doesn't entitle you to a big, massive payout. It just doesn't. Julie says, sounds like these Sound Transit employees have some dirt they don't want exposed. These people are horrible stewards of our taxpayer money. I agree. Av Geek Joe, nothing against CEO Tim, but I'm very concerned about this level of a payout. On point, Brandy, per the usual, right? So humble. Rick Johnson says, a lot of uncivilized things are happening in our civilized society. Draw the line. Yeah, and I mean, Joe Biden, I'm assuming that's about the sex tape in the Senate. You know, Joe Biden, remember his whole, we're going to bring decency back to the White House. And then you had the transgender influencer who went topless outside the White House at an event mm-hmm. and, you know,
thought that was okay.
And it was like Easter or something. And you have this, and it's like, okay, I don't think decency has made a return. I'm not saying that Trump was just the epitome of decency either, by the way. But this is
societal
something.
Problem, not also, a presidential problem.
You know that there's CCTV of this. You know that every inch of the Capitol has cameras. You know they have a camera in that hearing room.
Yeah. Whether it's on at that time, I don't know, but for sure security the hallway cameras, going into it.
Right. You know. And it's just so ridiculous. Leah says, tell us about the I can still breathe more taxes, please. Will you go to my shot, Nicole?
Oh, yeah.
You're the first one to ever notice that. I think it's because I repositioned it when I hung up the Christmas stuff.
Yeah, it moved over a little bit.
I have a good story about this.
It used to be cut off on the end.
Yeah, so when Dory passed away, Dory Monson, I was filling in on his radio show. And I told him, I said, hey, you know, I can continue to do this for a month or so. And I had reached out to Dory's wife and said, would you like me to clean out his desk? Because obviously Nicole was a wreck and no place to come back and... I didn't want somebody who didn't know Dory to clean out his desk. And so that's why I asked his wife. I said, do you want me to do it? And she said, yes. And his desk, he'd been there for how many years? Like 30 years?
Yeah, almost. 20,
and so there was a lot of stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, took a few days and went through everything. And he had a whole stack of these
bumper stickers
that say, I can still breathe, more taxes, please. I don't know where he got them.
Probably a listener.
Or like a listener, maybe Tim Iman, who knows? That sounds like something right. like that. And so I gave some of them away. I gave a lot of them back to Dory's wife, just with his boxes of stuff. But I kept that. And then I kept a big picture of him that's actually on the wall over here that was like his picture that was up in the station. So he just looks down at Nicole every day and just keeps keeps an eye on us. So yeah, that's where I got the "I can still breathe more taxes, please" bumper sticker. All right. Good questions and comments.
Someday we'll have to tell the story about the picture too, but not today. Stay tuned.
Oh, the picture of my, of Dorian here and me always.
No. The person who took it.
Oh, yes, that is a good story. Okay, we will. We're going over today, but we will tell that story someday. Okay, great questions and comments on the show, everyone. Before we get to our closing sanity check, Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital comes on the show with us every Thursday. We were talking about the fact that the Fed, for the third time in a row, decided to hold interest rates steady. And then the result in the stock market was it went gangbusters. And Zach Abraham's like, don't read too much into that.
I think they are beginning to try to juice the economy going into the next election.
Yeah.
Right? The Fed can say whatever they want. They are an extension of the Biden reelection campaign. They are. You know, everybody's excited. Oh, yeah, the Fed's going to cut rates. It juiced stock market. Stock market was up 1.3% today. The two-year bonds, the two-year government bonds that we own that are paying us 5%, their value went up 2.9% today. Right. And this goes to our whole point of saying, hey, guys, you're all in there buying stocks at record valuations going into what looks like a recession. Okay. Should be. And I think there's a lot more money to be made owning bonds with zero risk. It is one of the worst risk reward setups I have ever seen in my life, in my career, to go in there and buy stocks at these levels.
Yeah. And so he says, obviously be cautious. Don't use the stock market as the end all be all for what the state of the economy is. There's a lot of other dominoes stacking up to, unfortunately, a difficult economic scenario in 2024. So if you want to hear more from Zach Abraham, he does a weekly radio show, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. You can also learn how he and his team at Bulwark Capital Management specialize in risk management. They specialize in protecting your retirement portfolio against losses. So check them out, knowyourriskradio.com. All right, let's get to our closing sanity check. I thought I'd do a positive one. You know, I love good bipartisan bills. We have a legislative session coming up. So a few weeks ago on the show, we had Senator John Braun, who's the Senate Minority Leader in Olympia, on, and he was just sort of talking about the early stages of thinking about proposing a bill that would improve Holocaust education in our public schools. And he wasn't quite sure how the bill exactly would be framed or who might sign on to it. And I was happy to see that not only has he dropped this proposed bill, pre-filed it ahead of the session, but he has a Democratic co-sponsor. So Senator John Braun and Democratic Senator Jesse Solomon have their names on this bill, which has been given the title 5851. And it would do a few things, because I also expressed when I was chatting with the senator about some of my concerns about this, right? Like, I don't trust public schools right now with much of anything. And I thought, unless this is a very specific curriculum, you're really opening up some of these teachers who are pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas, to inserting their own bias in it. But Senate Bill 5851, again, now bipartisan, would do a couple things. Among those, it says, during the month of April, each public school shall conduct or promote age-appropriate educational activities that provide instruction, awareness, and understanding of the Holocaust and genocide education to all students. These activities may include classroom instruction, guest speaker presentations, school assemblies, and other developmentally appropriate activities. The Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, in collaboration with an expert Washington nonprofit organization that teaches the lessons of the Holocaust, must develop best practices and guidelines for high-quality instruction under this section and encourage and support middle school, junior high school, and high school teachers in implementing these best practices and guidelines. And so what they said is that the OSPI would create this curriculum in partnership with Seattle's Holocaust Center for Humanity. And I think that's good. I think leaning on the Holocaust Center for Humanity about how you can teach this in an age-appropriate way, which, if you haven't been to the Seattle Holocaust Center for Humanity, it is absolutely heartbreaking, but it is really a powerful place to go, I think, especially now if you're looking for somewhere to bring your kids to help them understand what's, you know, started all of this and is at the center of the current conflict and the history of it. I highly recommend it. But I like this. I think this is a good starting point to talk about what happened during the Holocaust. What I'll continue to question the senator on, and now Senator Jesse Solomon as well, is how you keep out, you know, you look at the 75 years now of history between Israel and Palestine and all of that. Do you teach that? And if so, how can you teach that in a way that doesn't lead to some of the really vitriolic positions that we're seeing play out now seeping into our kids' education. But I was happy to see this get bipartisan support, so I want to follow up on it. It seems like a very sane bill if you can get the appropriate education mapped out. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Thank you for listening to my Costco saga. And we will update you. We have requests out for comment to the Issaquah Police Department, to Costco, trying to get to the bottom of what happened from a law enforcement perspective and also what could happen to this woman whose name we know. We know who you are. We're looking into whatever connections that you might have as we speak. All right, we'll see you guys back on the live show tomorrow. If you haven't signed up already, support the show, just $5 a month, undividedpod.com.